not much about the ethical side because eating fish is so deeply enrooted in their tradition. I have to bring the tradition argument, unfortunately. It's tradition and cultural, right? Because as an island, of course, it makes sense that you fish, right? As opposed to meat, which was introduced in the late 1800s when people from America came in. Japanese people used to be vegetarians, right? It's like, well, it depends how you define vegetarianism. Even Buddhists, of course, they did eat poultry, for example, because it's a different animal as opposed to the four-legged ones.
Welcome to another episode of the Plant Fueled Podcast, where we explore the diverse and vibrant world of plant-based living. I'm your host and plant-based nutritionist, Callum, and today we're embarking on a journey that spans continents, from the bustling streets of Japan to the hearts of Europe. Joining us is a remarkable guest, Leonora Stefan, a plant-based nutritionist who carved out a unique niche for herself in one of the most unexpected places for a vegan lifestyle, Japan. Leonora's journey is fascinating as it is inspiring. Together, we dive deep into the nuances of being vegan in Japan, debunking myths and uncovering the surprising ease in which one can embrace a plant-based living lifestyle in the land of sushi and ramen. But our conversation doesn't stop there. We also take a comparative look at shifting dietary landscapes back in Germany, where Leonora hails from, and also my own backyard, highlighting the global movement towards plant-based eating. A significant part of our discussion revolves around the critical nutritional topics that often spark curiosities and sometimes concerns among vegans. Omega-3s and iodines. And these are fishy subjects that are crucial for anyone keen on maintaining a balanced and healthy plant-based lifestyle. And Leonora brings her expert insights to shed light on how to navigate these waters successfully. Beyond nutrition, Leonora's vibrant personality shines through in her engaging and fun Japanese reels. Even if, like me, you can't understand a word she's saying, her passion for Japan and plant-based living is contagious, making you want to book the next flight to Tokyo. Leonora is not just a great friend, but also an incredible source of inspiration, proving that with the right approach, veganism can thrive anywhere in the world. Enjoy. Peace and plants. Before we dive in, a small request. While our listener base continues to grow, it seems that the number of star ratings and reviews hasn't quite caught up. If you find value in what we're doing here, please consider leaving a review or a rating on your preferred platform. It's a small gesture that means a lot to me. It also helps new listeners to find the podcast, spread the message further, and enables us to continue bringing you the content and the guests that inspires, educates, and empowers us all. Thank you so much for your support, love, and being part of this journey with us. Remember, every small change contributes to a larger impact. Peace and plants.
Thanks. I think this has been a long time coming. I think we've been in touch with each other about 2 years, maybe a bit longer now. I think we first kind of stumbled across each other on Instagram. So I don't know why we haven't done this sooner.
Yeah, right. I mean, I remember I was part of the business tribe in England. I mean, English company business tribe, vegan business tribe. And they're helping vegan businesses, right? And because I don't have anything like that in Japan, I just took some courses with them. And then I saw an article about you, which is why I reached out to you 2 years ago or three.
Yeah, I think it must have been around 2020, 2021. And obviously, cross paths in the nutrition field because we're both in it, both being plant-based nutritionists. And so it was bound to happen at some point anyway. And obviously we'd done a few live cooks, which were absolutely chaotic.
We tried.
Yeah, I think the time difference was, because I was in England at that point and you were in Japan. So I was cooking dinner when you were cooking breakfast or vice versa. And it was the most chaotic live cook I think we've ever done. And nothing was going right, I don't think.
But it was fun.
Exactly. And weirdly enough, like, I think it's quite a small world as well, because I went home to England, I think it was last year, and went and did a talk, and I bumped into somebody that you also know as well, and basically very close friends with, who was she living in Japan? I think she was living in Japan
for a while. Yes, she was living in Japan, went back to the UK, and now she's back in Japan.
I'm
very happy about, of course. But,
yeah, that person is Neon She, if you do want to look her up, because she is a fantastic musician.
Yes, I love her songs. It's just my style. Love it. So, needless to say, I dragged her to karaoke a couple of times.
Yeah, it was very odd just to kind of start having this conversation. I was like, oh, I know a nutritionist in Japan. And she was like, is this the person? And I was like, yes. And she was like, she's my friend.
So, small world.
Yeah, such a small world. It's wild. Because even over here, being in Sydney, I keep bumping into people from back home, which is bizarre because it's literally 24 hours away on a plane. There's not many people in this country. However, everybody from England keeps appearing still.
Yeah, can be good, can be bad. Everyone is to judge.
However, for those of us that don't know who you are, let's break it down. Who are you?
All right. Thank you so much, first of all, for inviting me. It's really great to be here with you again and talking to you. I'm Leonora, a vegan nutritionist and originally from Germany. But I have been living in Tokyo for almost 10 years now. So I have been on and off in Japan before actually moving here after graduating from university, but permanently here 14 years in Tokyo.
You moved there in 2014, wasn't it?
Exactly. So yeah. 2014, almost 10 years. It doesn't feel so long, but it is.
Yeah, time goes so quickly these days.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, so you were going back to your German roots. You grew up like a part-time vegetarian, right?
Yes. So half of my family was basically vegetarian, one of these, you know, in the 80s, only beans vegetarians. Yeah, thanks for being a part of that movement in the very beginning. So my parents were those vegetarians, and I kind of half grew up on a vegetarian diet, but also an omnivore diet. So I have seen both. And I kind of got to understand when I was older that you don't necessarily need meat to be happy, be striving and healthy. So when I was 20, I decided to become vegetarian. Why not sooner? I don't know. I was selfish, which is, of course, okay. But I'm glad that I made the first step into vegetarianism at that time. But I was also one of those people who said, oh, I could never give up cheese. Because cheese.
I think we all are. When I gave up cheese, I had to because I became severely lactose intolerant, so I didn't have a choice.
So that's kind of good, though.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, this is going to be painful for me, or I just give this up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And actually, my sister became a vegan before me. And my parents also became vegans around the same time. And as I said, I liked my cheese. So I was like, oh, I could never be vegan. Then I moved to Japan permanently. After a couple of years being trying hard to be vegetarian in Japan, because well, even being vegetarian in Japan is not as easy. I had an epiphany about cheese while eating cheese, thinking about the dairy industry. So I decided, no, I don't want to support this anymore. I'm going to stop eating cheese, any dairy products, eggs and honey. Yeah, that was, I think, around 6 years ago. And yeah, still alive.
And you've been here since. No protein deficiency there.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm very, very glad that I took that step, even though it was, of course, a little bit more difficult as opposed in Western countries where we have like the nice vegan symbol on every food and we have so much choice. In Japan, it's a little bit, yeah, less choice. So
yeah, I was about to say, because I'm guessing the cultural differences between Germany and Japan are huge. Like, I've been to Germany recently in the last few years, and the vegan scene there is growing, especially in places like Berlin. However, obviously, from a very meat-heavy country in the first place, to then going to a place like Japan, where obviously it's very—I'd say it's meat-heavy, but also more fish-heavy than anything else. If I'm right in saying, anyway.
Yes, that's true. In Germany, it is a very meat-heavy country, but since the movement has started quite a while ago, there are lots of meat substitutes, which is, of course, very great for those who still want to have the taste, the same satisfaction, but not hurting animals. And in Japan, it is not really the meat, it's more the fish, which is in everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the memes about, oh, I'm going to buy these chips, but then there's dairy powder, right? This 0001%. It's the same in Japan, just with fish extract.
Yeah. So,
there is a lot of fish extract as a flavoring used, which can be, of course, quite hard if you don't want to eat fish. Mm.
Well, it's weird because I actually saw an article the other day from Germany, which I thought might be quite fitting for this, was the fact that now 50% of German children don't eat meat and are considering veganism or vegetarianism. So yeah, it is slowly growing and getting bigger and bigger there. And the same with Japan. I also found an article the other day. This came after the Olympics, so I don't know what's happened since then, because this article was from just after the Tokyo, or just before the Tokyo Olympics, was that they were obviously implementing more plant-based options, obviously to attract more people to Tokyo, which I'm guessing amazing. However, from what I see from your stories, still not enough. Your Starbucks is doing well.
Yes. Yes, you're right. And of course, even though I have been living in Japan for 10 years, I don't know everything. So it is mainly my personal impression. So please take everything I say with a grain of salt when I talk about veganism in Japan. But what I have seen is more a little bit of, they try out a couple of things, but it's not for the movement of veganism. It's more about how can we gain more customers, specifically the tourists, right? Because the tourists, they want to eat weird food, right? they're requesting things. We don't know what it is, but well. So, of course, it's good that at least big chains like Starbucks, for example, are offering something plant-based now. I have seen a lot of soy meat dishes from Japanese companies as well, which are sold in supermarkets. However, if you look closely into the ingredient list, it is not vegan. Might say plant-based, but if you can read what is actually in there, you always find some beef flavoring, for example, or eggs, which are not plant-based. So the concept of veganism and plant-based has not fully been understood. So I think we are in kind of like a finding phase here.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe.
I think one statistic that I did find was that the Japanese government exhibits, or they're looking to exhibit, a growth rate of 11.2% by 2028. So 11.2, it's still something. It's still something.
It is.
Yeah, I found these little things. I thought it'd be nice to find one from Japan and one from Germany as well. I did try find England and then Australia, but that was... it's hard with Australia. It seems to be... It's up and down. There's a lot of contradicting articles, whereas England, I think we all know now, is very much the capital of like vegan food, which is great. Yes. For me, when I go back, I am overwhelmed with the amount of choice, which was, it, like, I was back there for 2 weeks, and I gain so much weight eating so much.
Yes, I mean, the same applies to me when I go to Germany. I'm like, yeah, healthy eating. I will do that again when I'm back in Japan. I just want to try out every new product, and there are so many right now, which is great, definitely. But Japan is really maybe England 15 years ago.
Yeah.
In terms of vegan progress.
I would say the same with Australia. Like, there's a lot of articles going around online, but I think it's more flexitarian than vegan, where they're cutting down on meat consumption. However, it's still very much there. But I think they do have a very Asian community. So we do have a lot of, like, you go into the local Coles here, the local supermarket, and you got 19 different types of tofu there. Great for me.
Really? I love it. That's amazing.
So I'm over the moon by it, because it's my favorite food. I love it, and I can have so many different options, and we do have a lot of Asian cuisine here. But at the same time, it is also sometimes harder to find an Asian cuisine that is completely plant-based, unless you're going to those restaurants that are specifically for that.
Yeah. But I'm surprised to hear that. I really thought that Australia is a bit more moving into
I would say
vegan direction.
It's very much the capitals. It's much Sydney. Mm. It's very much Melbourne. If you go into the outback, I lived on a little town up north for 3 months doing my little banana farm work. And the only options were in the supermarkets, where they had literally the tofu selection and a few different bits and pieces in the fridges, but nothing else. Going down to the big cities, you've got a huge array of people. So, you know, you're finding everything you can ever find and imagine, which is great. But yeah, the more outback in the middle of nowhere areas, where there's more cattle ranches than there are people, it's slightly harder to find. I went on a road trip with my mum, and we drove a camper van through the outback, and we stopped at a service station just to pick up some food. And obviously me and my mum, both vegan, the only thing that was actually in there was crisps, but there's only one flavor that I could eat at that point as well, without the 0.1% milk powder.
It sounds like Japan, though.
Yeah.
Countryside, I think, maybe is quite similar here as well. Yeah, you're lucky if you can find some rice-based food, which is as close as vegan as it can get. I'm actually always saying, well, this product looks vegan enough to me, so I'm going to eat it, which basically means there are no obvious animal ingredients in there. The problem in Japan, I don't know how it is in Australia, is mainly like secondary and other ingredients, or the manufacturing process itself.
Yeah, the manufacturing process, kind of like the thing people have against Oreos, although no animal ingredients. They're made in a factory that has animal ingredients, and there may be some cross contamination. And it's very much the same over here. They don't put anything as purely vegan, because there may be cross contamination.
Yeah, in Japan, it's actually a little more backwards, if I may say, the sugar, the common white sugar we use here in Japan, is usually still whitened with bone char. So, which of course the manufacturing process is not vegan. However, the product in the end is still vegan. It doesn't contain any animals.
Yeah,
right?
It's so weird that bone char was the option, and still is the option in some countries. Like, it blows my mind that that is. I don't even understand what bone char actually is.
Who knows?
I feel like I'm that far into it that I don't need to know anymore, because I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah, exactly. And next to the sugar, we have things done in the process. I don't know if you know natto, the fermented beans, which are, of course, very healthy.
I've had natto, and I am not a fan.
I wasn't either, but of course, it takes some time to get used to. It took me around 3 years to get used to it. Now I love it. But it's a really great K2 source. Very good, of course, protein, calcium, zinc, It's kind of like really great food.
Your power.
It does taste and smell a bit weird. And yes, the consistency is also very weird. What I didn't know is that in order to ferment the soybean, you need bacteria, right? And this natto bacteria is usually grown on like gelatin or fish.
Mm.
Yeah. Which basically technically makes it non-vegan. However, the finished product doesn't contain any animal products. So is that vegan or not? And I think if you go back to the original definition of veganism, which basically says it's an ethical lifestyle, right? You want to do whatever you can to avoid the exploitation of animals, right? In Japan, you have to kind of see, okay, how far can I go? I hope people don't hate me now when I say that. But in Japan, it's so hard to really understand what happened in the manufacturing process. You literally have to call and contact the manufacturer. And even then, they might not give you an answer because it's a secret.
And I think that can be that can be hard, especially for tourists as well, who can't read. Like, the majority of tourists can't read Japanese.
Yeah.
I've been on Duolingo once. I tried Japanese for one day. I gave up. Are you fluent in Japanese now?
Well, it might sound fluent, but I can, of course, have like communication in Japanese. However, I'm still struggling in expressing and explaining about nutrition, which is, of course, the next step for my nutrition business. I want to be able to help non-English only Japanese speakers to understand more about nutrition. So I have to study.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm gonna put a pin in Japan for a second. I want to come back to it a bit later. Okay. So I've got a few questions about Japan, but they're going to come in later on what we're going to speak about. Because I think we kind of made a little list of what we kind of want to speak about beforehand. And obviously, with you being from Japan and fish being a very prominent feature in the Japanese diet, that omega-3 comes up and iodine comes up. And I think that's where we need to start, because I think people assume that, you know, for years and years and years, it has been assumed for years that omega-3 is purely down to fish. And we know now that is fish eating algae, and that's how they obviously, it gets distributed throughout the food system. So obviously cutting out fish out of the diet, are we going to survive? Are we going to get the omega-3? Our brain's going to be functioning. I think we need to kind of delve into the nutrition side of omega-3.
Yes, definitely. Yes, you're right. Omega, of course, is something that, will be of concern. Funny fact, I kind of grew up fishless, not because my parents didn't feed it to me, because they were half vegetarian. The other side of my family did try to feed me fish. However, I never liked fish, so I did not eat fish. Still here. I hope my brain works all right. But I think that's also proof that you can get omega-3 from other sources except fish. In Japan, of course, I think how people think about nutrients is very basic. So it's basically fish omega-3, right? And then for meat, it's protein, calcium, dairy. So they have these categories, right?
Yeah.
And in Japan, there's, of course, a lot of seafood. If you don't eat seafood, which was alive, there are still a lot of algae to feed on. They have an abundance of different algae, and I've never seen so many different ones. So if you, for example, live in Japan, you can try different algae right? To make sure you get get a lot of omega into your daily diet. If you don't live in Japan, don't worry, you can eat flax seeds or flaxseed oil or walnuts, nuts. So I think there should not be any problem in that area.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that is that's becoming more prevalent these days, is the fact that seaweed, well, obviously, apart from your nori sheets that I think have been around sushi for the last however long, you're really finding things like kelp noodles and stuff, which I absolutely love, that are absolutely full of omega-3 and any of these kind of seaweed-based dishes, which seem to be just becoming more and more prevalent through our society, which is great, because it is showing that obviously what we have been eating in the past doesn't necessarily have to be what we have to eat in the future. Because you are seeing that obviously these fish are much like protein, it's a recycled process. We're literally cutting out the middle fish.
Fish,
and going straight to the source of omega, so you're actually getting a lot more. And I think as well, I think there's so many different issues now with eating fish, even though, like, obviously if you went back a few years ago, if you take away the ethical side of it, fish would have been a healthy choice. But however, these days, like, obviously you've got so much pollution in the ocean, so you're thinking, like, the plastic's an issue, you need to obviously consider oil spills, you know, the polluting the waters, mercury levels, and like the abundance of lead within the ocean. So obviously these are giant significant factors that can cause many issues with inside the human body. Because I think there was a study done, I think a year or two ago, where they found microplastics from fish now inside the human body, which you can't get rid of now. That's something that can't be extracted.
Yes, it's there. Yes.
And that is from obviously what we've been throwing in, dumping in the oceans for the last however many years. And I think if anybody wants to kind of look in more into that, then, you know, Seaspiracy is definitely something that needs to be watched.
Yes, definitely. I do recommend this movie as well. It was hard to watch, but informative. Not really graphic, which of course is very good. I can't watch too many graphic things, but it was very, very informative.
Yeah, no, it's very informative on exactly what we need to be doing, and obviously the plastic straw situation, which was a giant hoax as well, that they weren't really the issue.
Exactly. Yeah, but I think in Japan it is really not much about the ethical side, because eating fish is so deeply enrooted in their tradition. I have to bring the tradition argument, unfortunately. It's tradition and cultural, right? Because as an island, of course, it makes sense that you fish, right? As opposed to meat, which was introduced in the late 1800s when people from America came in. So,
yeah, but wasn't there a ban on meat as well for quite a while in Japan?
Yeah, it was more kind of like, let's not eat meat. However, they always found ways around in terms of chicken is okay because it's a bird. So it's kind of
the logic sometimes blows.
Yeah, that's why when people say, well, Japanese people used to be vegetarians, right? It's like, well, it depends how you define vegetarianism. Even Buddhists, of course, they did eat poultry, for example, because it's a different animal as opposed to the four-legged ones. but I think what has been done in the past, we can't apply it to nowadays anyway, because it's a very, very different situation. And the thing is that many things, including how sales works in Japan and marketing, it's very conservative. So, for example, if you look at plant milks, right, jumping to the next topic, which wasn't even our plan, but I just want to give you an example. In Japan, we have dairy And then, of course, we have soy milk as an alternative, non-dairy alternative. It is very hard to find any other plant milk, right? So we do have some oat milk, some almond milk now. It's coming, slowly coming. And what I was really surprised about, there's no rice milk. It's like, why is there no rice milk? But there isn't. So the reason is usually that people get older here, the society is becoming older, they stick to what they know, which is usually dairy, right? Or soy milk. The younger people, they would maybe love to buy oat milk, but it's so expensive. So they just buy the dairy milk. So there is a big, big gap in marketing, conservative people, and money, I guess. So it is quite tough to, I think, break into the market when you're, for example, a plant milk company.
Mm. Yeah, I was actually surprised. Well, no, not the same country in any way, shape or form. But I flew into China, and China's not known for being the most vegan friendly place in the world. however, that airport, they did have Oatly. And I was wow. like, this is yeah. All I wanted was a coffee when I got off that plane. I got off and I saw they had Oatly. I was like, it's the only thing there that I could have.
Yes.
I think even in those kind of countries, things are changing slowly. But as you said, it's an expense as well. And obviously, like, it's the more demand, the more supply and demand, obviously, the cheaper things are going to get. And obviously, hopefully seeing that in the future in Japan as well. Yeah. Luckily, so I actually had two Japanese roommates at one point.
Right.
And one was not vegan. She, I think, 90% vegan, and comes from Okinawa.
I love Okinawa.
Amazingly, it's a blue zone. Obviously, the people living the longest, and even when you look back at them, they're not eating a huge amount of like foods. Meat foods, but it's more your whole foods and a lot of tofu as well. And these people are living into the hundreds. But obviously, they did have small amounts of fish on their plates as well, tiny bits. But the majority was a very soy-based diet, I think.
Yes, it is true. So the Okinawan diet is, of course, very, very different. They also eat a lot of not pink potatoes, the purple potatoes.
Oh, the purple sweet potatoes?
Exactly. So there's a lot of different balance, right? So if I compare what they eat, or traditionally what they have eaten, or the old people, what they still eat, with what people eat in Tokyo, it is very, very different. Because people who have never been in Japan might have this image, oh, people get so become so old in Japan because they eat so well. Well, it depends where you go. So people in Tokyo, for example, they're very used to fast food, very oily food as well. For Christmas, for example, people go to KFC, buy a bucket of 20 pieces of chicken for Christmas. So there's not really this image anymore of people are very healthy.
Yeah.
In Tokyo specifically, people are very lack of fiber. Definitely, there is a bigger gap in nutrient deficiencies as well.
Yeah, but this is a conversation I had with her, that obviously the Okinawans in the past, a very, very healthy diet and living extremely long. And then now that Western society and Western culture has moved in, and so that it is slowly declining. Obviously, the food's getting worse, and they're not living as long. And she, I think she found that very upsetting as well. But she did say that obviously where it is it's an island. It's off of Japan. So it's very different to how the rest of Japan eat. And I think that's the same with when you look at any of these blue zones, as far as the blue zones. When you look into them, the ones in Italy, the ones in Greece, they're all small islands off apart from the Californian one, which I'm surprised is still there. Because I didn't think anything coming out of America was going to be overly healthy. But these little secluded areas that are eating a predominantly plant-based diet are living into their hundreds. And the Okinawan, when I actually met someone from Okinawa, I was like, this is wild that you're here. And I had so many questions for her. And obviously, like, her diet consists of literally very much quinoa, tofu, rice and oats, things like that. She's a very active person, which is amazing to see that she's still keeping on those traditions, although it's not so much in Okinawa as now in Australia, but still keeping on those, although obviously we're brought into a westernized society.
Yeah, exactly. But that's also another thing, I think. You mentioned she's very active. I think people who might not live in the big cities might be prone to be a bit more active if they maybe have their own fields of greens, which is one of my dreams, but I don't know if I will ever be able to do it. Maybe one day. But specifically in Tokyo, Tokyo is a very, very busy place. People sit a lot. That's a nowadays illness, I think. People sit too much. People don't move a lot. And then there's the convenience stores with convenient food packaged already. So there's not really the urge of, okay, I move. I get a fresh apple instead of, something fried. Which is, of course, cheaper, right? It's, of course, also cheaper than fried. fried food is cheaper than vegetables or fruits, usually. So, of course, people are more prone to eat what's already ready-made.
Mm, of course. So, pushing it back to omega-3, obviously, we need to...
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. I think when we take out the fact that we don't obviously need the fish, and obviously Japanese being quite a culturally fish-based, I think we need to obviously dive into what actually omega-3 does, because I think everybody just assumes, we need this nutrient, but apart from people knowing brain health, maybe a bit of eye health, they don't actually know exactly what it does. People sprout, it's the same as when people spout B12, protein, omega-3, but actually don't know anything about what it does for the body. They just say words that they know exist. So let's dive back into omega-3. We do have three different versions. So we have DHA. And I'm not going to try and pronounce these words because there's no need to. But
that's why we have the short form.
So that omega-3 fatty acid is found in most ocean-based foods, such as a variety of fish, seaweed, and algae. Then you have EPA, and that's a variation of omega-3 fatty acids that are once again found in various seafood sources and its counterpart, including a variety of marine products as well. So on a meat-free diet, we can get EPA and DHA from seaweed, algae, or supplementation, and also through ALA, which will help produce this essential nutrient. And then ALA, primarily found in plant sources such as your chia seeds, flax seeds, walnuts, and then the body starts to obviously convert these fatty acids into various amounts of EPA and DHA for our bodies to kind of use in different ways to benefit the body. And obviously ALA found in various plant foods. So it's not hard to get omega-3 on the diet.
I think you just have to know which kind of foods you should eat on a daily basis, because I think that's what most people don't know.
That's
like how much of it. So,
and I would also... I think people, when they'll be like, oh, I need flax seeds and chia seeds. Yeah, you do. But buy them ground. Buy them ground. Because if you're eating them in seed form, your body can't digest. So
you need to
break it down. So if you get like the, what would you call it? The ground down flax seed. Oh, flax meal. That's the word. Flax meal. or flax dust, then you're going to be able to get this easily. Plus, you know, your walnuts, your avocado, your chia seeds, anything that's broken, anything seed based needs to be broken down. So kind of like ground down sunflower seeds.
And it's best to store it in a cool, dry place as well. So if you buy like already ground flax seeds, I personally would buy whole ones and then grind them as I need them. Because of course they do start losing some nutrients and might become bad after a while if you leave them out for too long. But if you put them in the fridge, they can have a longer shelf life or fridge life, however you want to call it. But if you basically have one or two spoons of, even if you don't like seeds, you can take, one or two spoons of flaxseed oil. That will also help.
Of course.
So.
Yeah, I think if these things aren't things that you're willing to take in food format as well, there is a variety of like algae-based supplements as well that are easily going to give you the same benefits and more.
Yes.
Because they're readily activated for you to have. But omega-3, it does play into, like, I think most people know exactly what it does. I think they know it's brain health and it's eye health. So obviously when it comes to eye health, it helps protect against macular degeneration and dry eye syndrome and glaucoma. And this is due to the DHA being naturally concentrated in the eye retina. And that's kind of the weak layer of tissue found at the back of your eyes. However, brain health as well. Omega-3 is the significant building block for the brain, and it's crucial for your optimal brain health. So you need to have a consumption of it to help the brain's nerves and cells. There's 40% of the natural omegas inside the brain is DHA naturally. So you kind of want to be topping that up constantly, because obviously
yes.
you're not going to consume anything, you are then developing a deficiency in omega-3.
Yeah. Especially when you're pregnant or when you have small children. But even when you're becoming more senior, it's really important to make sure to get enough omega-3. I do always recommend to, of course, take a blood test, annual blood test, just to check your levels, even though, of course, a blood test is not always 100% accurate, but at least you will know your current status for a little bit and see, okay, do I have to take more? Do I have to take external supplements to help my body to store more omega or not? Or if I can just eat more walnuts a day. So, yeah.
I think as well, like, there's obviously brain and eye health is what most people know about. And then we do have heart health as well. And obviously there has been studies showing that it can reduce anxiety and depression, but obviously it has been linked to the emotional regulation within the brain. And then obviously the heart health, if you're eating enough heart healthy foods, obviously it's reducing those triglycerides in the bloodstream. And that can obviously, that can break down the risk of obesity and heart disease. And then in early life as well, when you're eating, as you just mentioned, when you're eating during pregnancy, you're helping the baby develop. However, there is one part which I cannot what's the right word for it? I can never recommend, because I will never be able to experience it. But that is menstruation. From what I know, and this is from studies, so is that menstruation can help alleviate the pain of menstruation. However, I'm a guy. I'm not going to menstruate. And so I have no idea if this is false or accurate information, and I do assume that it may change between person to person.
Yes, so as you said, and you're very right, it does depend on the person. It can help with menstrual pain, because of course omega is also helping the reparation processes, right, with tissues and just the overall healing processes. So it can help to have additional omega-3. For me personally, it didn't help. I have to take some painkillers, unfortunately, sometimes, but this is something I have to do just to make sure I can live my day during those critical days. But it's definitely worth a try. And just try it out, see how you feel. In that case, I would definitely also recommend to eat more whole foods. So instead of flaxseed oil, eat some more nuts, a handful of more nuts, because, of course, next to omega, those nuts contain much more nutrients, which will be very beneficial to your body in the time of the period. So I would definitely recommend that.
Yeah, I did assume that it may vary from person to person, because I was about to say, I know some people that I've told this to, and I don't think they were very appreciative of it, although it was meant in good faith. I was like, it may be able to help, because obviously the science is there, but obviously it is really just going to go down to the person in question. I think that's the same with anybody's body.
Exactly.
Everybody's going to react differently to exactly what we're eating. But when it comes to omega, we do also have iodine as well, next to omega. And this is also a nutrient that I think most people are very unaware of. However, much like omega-3, most people assume it would come from fish. Once again, it is another recycled product. You can get it from beef. You can get it from milk. But that's also due to supplementation from the cows.
Exactly.
And also iodine being legally put into, or an iodine supplement is put in bakeries. So a lot of bread is fortified now with iodine.
Right.
Because it's something that we're, as a nation, or as a worldwide problem, not getting enough of.
Yes. I think the main issue, or the reason for that, is that just the water and the soil doesn't contain as much iodine or nutrients in general, but especially iodine as well, same as selenium. It doesn't contain enough anymore to have the plant actually fortified. So it really depends on the region all the food is grown in. So as you said, supplementing and fortifying the actual food we eat is pretty normal nowadays. I think in Japan, because there's a lot of seaweed eaten, just in general, people here are a little less prone to have a deficiency in iodine, which is of course very good. But of course here you also have to be a little bit careful not to eat too much of the seaweed or the algae, right? So same with salt, because in Germany people love salty food. Iodine fortified salt is one of the main sources in Germany to actually get iodine, but as always, people do like to eat a lot of it, and of course it should be all in moderation.
A whole other load of issues. Yes. With that sodium intake, and I think over here iodized salt is now becoming the norm. I don't buy iodized salt. I prefer to get it through, your kelp noodles or a bit of nori on a salad or a meal or something like that. Mainly because I know I've got an addictive personality, and once I put a bit of salt on something, I'll be putting a lot of salt on something, and then I don't want to be that nutritionist being like, oh, I've got a salt issue.
Exactly. Everything in moderation.
Yeah, I think as well, like sea vegetables in general, so like your seaweed, your sea kelp, they're the highest iodine content food on the planet. So I think even just say one nori sheet, it's 232 micrograms per serve. So if it's iodine you're wanting to get more into the diet, then you definitely need to be at least taking maybe a supplement, or you're taking some more sea vegetables or a bit of iodized salt. It will be in your bread in most countries.
Exactly. And as I always recommend with every nutrient, before you supplement, except B12, please always supplement B12. I always recommend to just do a blood test, see what you really need, and then really pinpoint and focus on these nutrients, but not just go out and buy all different pills of nutrient supplements, because this will also not be good for your body if you have only the isolated forms of the nutrients. Can be quite counterproductive, not only for your health, but also to your wallet.
Yeah, I feel like people do supplement a lot of things that are unnecessary. I see that people like supplement vitamin C on a daily basis, just eat an orange, eat an apple. It's cheaper to eat an apple or an orange.
And there's so much more in there as well. Fiber.
I feel like there's an array of different nutrients in these foods as well that you're not getting with supplement. But also, I don't see the necessary need for a supplement for something like that. For things like vitamin C, for instance, that you're getting that from predominantly most, as long as you're eating a well-balanced diet of fruits and vegetables at one point, you should be getting enough vitamin C no matter what. So a supplementation of it is mind-blowing to me, unless you obviously have a necessary issue that you need to fix. However, I don't know how rare that is.
Yes, exactly. So unless you're a sailor on the sea, not getting any vitamin C.
Yeah.
We all know where that leads to.
Who doesn't want to be scurvy?
No, you don't want your feet to fall off. Yeah. But in general, I think nowadays there's a lot of marketing which makes people panic in not getting enough nutrients, and maybe that's one of the things that keeps many people from adopting a more plant-based diet, because they hear, oh, maybe no protein here and there, no omega or whatever. I'm scared of trying it, and I think that's one of the main point. If you really eat everything, I mean, there's an abundance of fruit and abundance of different vegetables. And if you make sure to eat a variety of different vegetables and fruit, then you should be getting all the nutrients your body needs. Except B12, please take a supplement.
Yeah. And I think that's also, it's safe to say that's a worldwide problem. That's not just vegans.
Exactly.
That.
I'm saying that to everyone.
Yeah.
Get your B12 tested.
What diet you're on, just take the B12. It's so much easier. You know you're getting it, and you know you're going to be better off with that. With it.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, just to kind of go back to iodine quickly. Obviously, we didn't actually mention what it does for the body, but if you do have thyroid issues like hyperthyroidism or underactive thyroid, then it can help balance that out, obviously that way helping to kind of maintain weight, obviously tiredness, help prevent hair loss and things like depression as well. I'm not going to say it's going to cure depression. I think that'd be wrong for me to say. However, it can help with the nerval function of that as well. I'm obviously improving the overactive thyroid and your cognitive functions as well. And I did the other day put out a post that we were going to be speaking. And if there was anything that anybody wanted covered, and we have two. We have folate and we have vitamin D. Vitamin D. Let's delve into vitamin D.
Yes. What I think is very interesting about vitamin D is that especially in Western darker countries, so for example, Germany, where I'm from, many people have vitamin D deficiency, right? Doesn't matter what diet they eat, there is a deficiency. In Japan, however, this is not really the biggest problem here, which is very interesting. And the reason for this is that even in winter, there is so much sun, which is amazing. So there's not really a winter depression here. I still feel like, oh, wow, 20 degrees, like 2 days ago or today even, it was almost 20 degrees and we have December. So that's really, really amazing. So, of course, that's one thing, because for vitamin D, the best you can do really, also for overall health, be in the sun for at least 20 to 30 minutes. Of course, put some sunscreen on to prevent sunburn, especially if you have a very light skin. But make sure to get a lot of the provitamin D, which will then eventually become the crucial vitamin D in your body.
I completely understand where you're going with the suntan lotion there, because being in Australia now and me being pale skinned and English, that I burn so easily.
Yes. So make sure to get sun, but also make sure to protect your skin. So yeah. As we see, vitamin D is not really only diet related. Of course, there are some foods who have vitamin D in them, but it's not a nutrient we primarily get from food.
Yeah, it is purely sunlight. We can get some from mushrooms, but I don't know the amount of mushrooms that we would need to eat to actually obtain the right amount of vitamin D that we need. But sunshine, and it's great here, Australia, it's fine. But back in England, I think England's one of the highest for vitamin D deficiencies in the world, alongside America. And America, although a lot of it being a very sunny place in some certain parts like California, the more that people are now sitting indoors as well, or working from home and only seeing, you know, morning light and evening light, they need to start supplementing as well, because also the more clothes we wear these days as well, and that's not me advocating for everybody to be naked, the more clothes we wear, the more we're covering up our skin from natural sunlight. So if we're wearing jumpers and that constantly and not absorbing sunlight, we are becoming more deficient. So if you are stuck indoors, even if you're in a hot country, day to day for long hours on end and not being very sanitary and just kind of walking, having a little walk or a little stroll, then it's definitely worth taking a vitamin D supplement, even if you are somewhere in like Australia.
Yes.
Because I think we're now in very kind of dark rooms with fake light, so we assume we're getting a lot more than we actually are. But always worth getting the vitamin D as well, and don't try get it from mushrooms. Although I've seen so much going around lately about vitamin D on Instagram and things like that, where it's a hellhole of misinformation. I saw someone the other day rubbing beef tallow on their face, because apparently that's going to help. I didn't know beef tallow existed, and I wish I never did.
But people thanks rubbing for sharing.
Yeah, they're just kind of rubbing it on their face, hoping that's going to give them vitamin D, and I don't think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any science behind that either.
Maybe it's a placebo effect that can help as well. Yeah, I think in general, there's a reason why the human body is the way we are, with some nutrients being able to be stored longer and different sources of the nutrients we need, right? Because we used to be outdoors more, as you said. But going way back, of course, we used to be animals outside, which, of course, gives us enough exposure. And, of course, sorry, I only know the Japanese word now. Undo. What is it? Exercise. Sorry, one more time. So... it gives us enough exercise as well, being outside, which of course also helps in building muscles, building strong bones as well. And nowadays, we don't do that much anymore.
And it's, although I don't want to put a bad thing on cholesterol. So cholesterol is a very talked about subject, and there are two different types of cholesterol. We have to make that clear. There's a bad cholesterol and there's a good cholesterol. However, our body does produce the good cholesterol. However, obviously, for that to be produced, we do need sunlight. because that obviously mixes with our body, that mixes with our skin, and then we produce that cholesterol as well, the naturally occurring cholesterol, not the cholesterol that will give you things like heart disease, strokes, and many other issues.
Yes, definitely.
Because I think it's the other day. Yeah, I think there's the study that I saw the other day was 40% of Americans are deficient in vitamin D. So, and that's a large population, and that's just America. So I don't know what that goes like to the rest of the world. I know United Kingdom is a lot higher. And this is not just a meat-free problem.
Exactly. I think that's what people don't know. And I don't blame people because I myself, before studying about nutrition, I had no idea about nutrition at all, right?
Oh, I don't think anyone does. Like, the schools don't teach you nutrition.
No, there's nothing really which helps you understand nutrition easily. And even though nowadays we have everything on our fingertips, there's so much misinformation going around too, right? We don't know, is this a trustable source? Is it not? If I have to pay for it, I don't want to pay for it. I rather have a look what a Boulevard Press is saying about protein, for example.
Yeah.
So of course, and then of course, if you are in an echo chamber surrounded with people who think the same as you, then of course it's stronger. You're more prone to have this opinion.
You create a little bubble around you of the people that say the things. Yeah. And this is why even on my page, I try to follow people with different views as well. Mainly so we can have a friendly debate. So I'm not just kind of creating an echo chamber around myself about, you know, plant-based eating, about veganism, because otherwise that you can go down a very deep hole with that and just end up on the wrong side. And although I myself am true to it, true to veganism and plant-based eating, I do have to respect that other people have varying opinions, and it's nice to always friendly debate those as well. However, obviously I have to rely on the science, and what the science is saying is that obviously a plant-based diet is that the healthiest version of a diet you can be on, that's going to help with all those different conditions and also help you thrive. And that's the science as of the moment. Obviously things change along the line. Obviously you need to, there's going to be other like people out there the same as us that have varying different opinions, but as long as you can debate over the actual science, then I think that is the best way to go about things.
Yeah, and I think it's also very important to still be open to the science, because of course we can't forget that especially nutrient or nutrition science is such a young subject. We didn't know about B12 until 50 years ago or even less. That's nothing, right, in the history of humans. I think we definitely need to make sure that we are open to new findings as well, but also critically look at the studies being done, right? Because not every study has the right conclusion, or maybe it doesn't apply to everyone.
Or right? Has this been written by a biased company as well.
Exactly.
Or funded by a company that has intentions.
Exactly. So it's always, we always have to double, triple check, talk to different people, keep an open mind, which is, of course, very hard nowadays.
I completely understand. Like, that's as you said, it is a very new subject, and obviously B12 only fit, that was, 50 years ago. And it was met in the other nutrients. I think it's like choline has only been, that's about 10 years at most, maybe a bit longer than that. And people are still very unaware, but also there's still science being on it to actually conclude what it actually does. We know we need it, but we don't know exactly what it does. And exactly, also, when it only seems that, I don't know if it's just me, and it may be you as well, but until the vegans become more prevalent in the world, I never heard the word protein being bounced around. But all of a sudden, as soon as everybody appears out of nowhere, proteins being bounced around constantly.
That is very true, very true. But I think the main reason for this is that if you have never been in touch with any subject like that, like nutrition, it's a thing you are doing every day, eating, right? But you never think about it deeply. And then there's someone appearing who's challenging what you have learned all your life. And it works. And you're like, but how does that work? Right? Mm. I mean, where do you get all the stuff? I mean, what I've learned or what my doctor told me, that's another subject, the doctors, is that you have to eat this and that, right? Animal products to get the specific nutrients. So, of course, it's a bit this kind of challenging aspect. So it makes people think like, oh, there is another way, but how does it work? And I think that's why we are here. That's why we chose maybe to become a nutritionist and help people to understand that there is another way. It is possible to thrive on a plant-based diet without eating animals or animal products.
Oh, completely agree. I feel like it's become more prevalent that people can thrive because as soon as Olympians come into it, and like vegan Olympians that are appearing and winning gold, we can't question whether you can thrive anymore, let alone people on a day-to-day basis. But obviously, I'm not dead. You're not dead.
no one would.
we're still thriving. Yeah. You got your blood tests done the other day.
Yes, as well, exactly.
And they all came back absolutely fine. So you're probably doing better than a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think it's always about the balance, right? Because of course, in Japan, it's very funny. There are usually two reactions when I tell them I'm vegan. I don't eat any animals and animal products.
What is the word for vegan in Japan?
Vegan. So it's literally that. one reaction is the more common one in the Western world. It's like, where did you get your protein from? Where do you get this and that from? And the other reaction is, oh, wow, that's so healthy. And it's like, okay, so it's either this or that. So can you please decide? What is the main impression of vegans here? So but to be very honest, of course, it can be healthy if you're vegan. Veganism, as we know, is more an ethical lifestyle. The plant-based diet can also vary, right? It can be healthy, but if you only eat pre-made foods and, you know, all the burgers and sweets which are there, then, of course, it can also be unhealthy.
Can be a very unhealthy plant-based diet. I think it's people assume you're going to be healthier. However, Ben & Jerry's exists. And
not in Japan, so I'm still healthier. But yes, you're right. Mm.
I think the other subject we did have was folate, which was C9. This actually came in from a lady called Sarah who wanted to know about B9. And B9 is folic acid. So I think when it comes to B9, it's in a lot of different foods. It's a B vitamin that is very prevalent in your plant-based foods. However, I think if you're eating a very whole foods plant-based diet, you're not going to be lacking in B9 at all. Yes. As long as you're always going to be creating the right amount for yourself. I think if I take away the food out of it, I'm just going to kind of go what it does. So B9 is needed in our systems to synthesize the repair of our DNA. And obviously it effectively prevents irregular changes in the DNA as well, which can lead to severe illnesses such as cancer. So it helps the body produce an array of healthy blood cells that carry around oxygen throughout the body. And if you're having a low percentage of B9, which if you are eating whole foods, you shouldn't be, these red blood cells then cannot be produced. Therefore, your body's oxygen levels get lower into the bloodstream, and then it turns into low folate anemia. And then that can lead to more physical and mental health difficulties as well, such as things like depression, anemia, fatigue, and weakness as well. However, it is very, very low, low deficiency need. I think it does change when pregnancy.
Yes, that's what I was about to say. I think many people don't know that even if you're trying to get pregnant, you have to make sure that your body is set up the right way. And folate, as you said, is a very, very important nutrient during pregnancy, as it helps form the human being as well. And that's why most supplements pregnant people get in.
Yeah, I think, yeah, sticking to a, even if you do eat a you know, meat alternatives, if you eat a 90% whole foods, plant-based diet, you will be getting enough folate. And that shouldn't be an issue. Obviously, if you are low, that's something you need to speak to your doctor about. But obviously, whole foods can, you can alleviate and any symptoms that you may, that she has. I want to ask her opinion about problems with food and eating habits in Japan.
It's a very broad question.
Yeah. So the way I took this was what do you think that are the eating habits in Japan that stop people going plant-based? Is it just culturally?
That's a very good question. I think, of course, part of it is culture and tradition. I'm saying tradition because the tradition of having a KFC bucket on Christmas is very new, right? In the 90s, some random person made it up. And since then, it's basically marketed to the public and it became a tradition. But there are a couple of other things I think might weigh into it. But one of the biggest one is really the convenience. People don't like to think, everywhere in the world, of course, people don't like to think. They just want to have it ready. If it's readily available, they're happy to eat it, right? And I think that's a similar thing in Japan as well. People are very busy working the whole day. You know, I don't know if you heard about the working culture in Japan, but
I've seen some videos.
Yeah, I mean, it changed a little bit after Corona. So work from home, hybrid work is a thing now, luckily. But still, people they want convenience. So many people don't have time or don't want to cook food they take to work with them. So it's more about, okay, I just pop out to a supermarket or convenience store and buy whatever is there cheaply, right? Then the other thing is just a lack of education. There are not many vegans. And the reason I became a nutritionist actually is because at my former workplace, I got asked by my colleagues so many questions every day, like, where do you get protein from? What about oils? What about this and that? And I didn't know an answer to that. So this actually helped me to be who I am today, because I thought I really need to educate people and I need to help them understand and give them an answer, which is satisfactory, right? Because the main reason I became vegan was an ethical reason. I just didn't want to kill and exploit animals, but and so on. So it's very in these boxes. It's not to be questions. This is what we have always done. This is how it's going to be. Let's leave it like this.
I completely understand that. And I think the other one actually ties in very much to what you already said is, why do you think veganism or vegetarianism is still not popular, which I think you answered very well already before I even got there. although I did see that I think you're in the whole of Japan, the restaurants went from 400 to 1,000 in the last few years they're having vegan restaurants. Yes. So it's still growing.
There are more options, but this is mainly, I would say, because of tourists.
Yeah.
But it is growing. So I'm meeting young people. So the younger generation, they're really concerned, of course, about sustainability. What can we do to preserve our future, of course? And then the ethical question of, do we really still have to kill and eat animals in order to survive pops up. So I think the younger generation is a little bit more, how would you say that, autonomous? Is that the right word?
Autonomous, that is the right word.
So the younger generation is a bit more autonomous and is more asking questions, right? Because one thing in Japan, which is why it's a very nice country to live in, because it's quiet, like no one talks on the train, on the phones, which is nice, but that also means people do not voice their opinions, or they don't question things. So
you're helping these people though, aren't you?
I'm trying. That's why I have to study more Japanese to connect.
I've seen your little nutrition guide for vegans in Japan.
Yes, that's my current project, what I'm working on. So I know the struggle. I know how difficult it can be. And you mentioned earlier as well, like reading Japanese. Like, yeah, I mean, no one is going to study Japanese for a trip to Japan, right? And it is not as easy as in other countries, because we don't have a vegan sign on specific foods which are fine to eat for vegans. We don't have that. So I'm writing the ultimate vegan guide for Japan, which is basically simplifying what to do. It's kind of like it's not like a travel guide saying like, yeah, this is the attraction here and there. It's more about, okay, when you go to a convenience store, this is what you can eat. This is definitely vegan, as far as we can tell, but also talking to the manufacturer with pictures. So I really want to make it as easy as possible. And I made a vegan restaurant card to communicate with the staff. So with some translation, if you're brave enough, you can try and talk to the staff, or you just show the staff with, I'm vegan, I don't eat this and this and this, but I can eat this and this and that. Because the question is always, oh my God, you don't eat this. What should I do? Which is why I added the part, I can eat gluten, you know, I can eat pasta, I can eat rice, I can eat tofu, to give them an idea what vegan people eat. And it's not done yet, but I hope to publish it as an ebook very, very soon, and it will be available for download, and hopefully helps people navigating with their vegan lifestyle through Japan.
I did see your little trailer for it yesterday, and it won the best content on Instagram award for that day, because it was hilarious. I must have watched it on repeat about 3 times, and I was like, I couldn't stop laughing. I probably raised those views a bit.
Thank you very much.
It was hilarious.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you have to also approach the whole topic with a little bit of humor as well. Sometimes I don't know if I should laugh or cry. And I just thought, well, let's make it a bit more fun to approach, and hopefully it will reach the right audience, the right people as well, who might need that guide.
I'm sure it will, because I think like the more people that will be also coming to Japan, because I know a lot of people I know are visiting. I actually have 2 very good friends that are vegan, but one's vegan, one's vegetarian, that go to Japan on a regular, I say regular basis, every few years. And I think something like this would come in very handy for them, because they do find it hard to understand exactly what's going on there. So I think we're going to wrap this up in a second. However, I did have a closing thought from my little Japanese friend, Aki, mm-hmm. Who was saying that we mentioned the blue zones, how to kind of live that way if you're looking to be on a more whole foods, plant-based diet, but a more Okinawan way. Which basically what was written here was embrace, and I don't know if I'm ever going to say this word right, ikigai. Embrace an ikigai.
Yes.
Do you know what that means? Because I do not.
Yes. Oh, now I have to explain. No, I mean, my understanding of ikigai, of course, everybody has maybe a little different understanding, but that's basically ikigai. Ikigai is your passion, something you put your heart and soul into, your reason to thrive and push forward to a healthy limit, of course. And for me personally, I can give you an example. My ikigai, when I was in the situation with being an ethical vegan and us having all these coworkers asking me questions, and I was so afraid of not knowing an answer. And then I found the university in Germany who actually provides, who provides courses to become a certified vegan nutritionist. I thought, wow, this is amazing. Like, not only can I learn about nutrition myself, I can actually help people and make it easier, and I can help the movement, right? So for me, knowing that I can help the animals at least a little bit step by step by helping to educate people about it, this keeps me going and makes me happy. And I hope I can share that with everyone around me as well. But this is basically ikigai, something which helps you thriving and keeps you happy and healthy in that way. Because if you have a reason to live, then this is making you healthy as well.
I love that. On this list as well, there is rely on a plant-based diet. So older Okinawans have eaten a plant-based diet most of their lives. Their meals of stir-fried vegetables, sweet potatoes, and tofu are high in nutrients and low in calories. Get gardening. I don't expect gardening to be on there.
but yes, it's very true.
Almost all Okinawan centurions grow or once grew a garden, a source of daily physical activity. What else has she said? Eating more soy. The Okinawan diet is rich in foods made from soy, like tofu and miso soup. And then maintain a moai, something to do with social network.
Yes, that's true.
I don't know if I'm saying the word right again. So that was moai. Ah. Yeah. So the Okinawan, I have. When I didn't know a word, I did kind of get a translation from it. And a Okinawan tradition of forming a moai provides a secure social network of safety nets.
Yes.
Enjoy the sunshine, stay active, plant a medicine garden, and have an attitude.
That sounds amazing. And if you have a little bit of time left, you can also build an animal sanctuary.
And that time as well. Well, these people are living into the hundreds, so yes. We've got time. If we stick to this, we've got time. It's a bit of food for thought when these people are living into the hundreds and eating a very predominantly plant-based diet full of soy. So just before I let you go, we now have a quick fire round for you. So got five questions for you. I'm going to throw them at you. You answer as quick as possible.
Okay. All right. I try.
What's your favorite Japanese dish?
Tempura. I don't know if you know tempura. Sorry.
Tempura? Is that the battered?
Yes.
Battered vegetables? Yep.
Yes. However, sometimes it does contain egg, so be careful.
Favorite fruit?
Strawberry.
Favorite vegetable?
Oh, do I have to choose? I love all vegetables. I do love broccoli, though.
Okay.
Broccoli.
Favorite plant protein?
Favorite plant protein, tofu.
And you are stuck on a desert island. You've woken up there. You're next to a pig. Luckily, there's a supermarket there. What are you cooking for you and that pig?
Whatever they have, I would guess.
You get to make whatever there is. The supermarket's there. It's open. You're making friends with this pig.
Yeah, whatever they can provide in a vegan food, I mean. Yeah, I mean, maybe like a quinoa tofu fried pan or something like that.
Nice. And your karaoke song? Or
Do I have to choose? Same with vegetables. I mean, I do love singing ABBA, for example, like the oldies.
Who doesn't? I love singing ABBA.
Yeah, but I also like some Japanese songs. I think if you ask your friend from Okinawa, Jimanju no Takara, great song. Jimanju no
Takara. I don't know if I can even pronounce that back to her.
You can just show her this clip and then it's a great song. I love it because it's about the love for Okinawa. And it's a great song.
Love that.
Wow, I'm really bad at this, right? Answer as fast as possible. Maybe I should eat more nuts to get my omega-3. Yeah.
So I think we're going to round this off. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you so much for having me today. It was great. I could go on and on.
Yeah, I think it has been a long time coming that we have been thinking about this, and it's finally happened. So
yes,
you know, I feel like we've got a lot to speak about. So I think maybe a part two, maybe in the future.
Definitely, I'm up for it. And when you come to Japan, maybe we can have a life or something like that, going somewhere, exploring Japan's vegan restaurants.
And obviously a bit of karaoke.
Of course. Maybe without the life, though. Don't want to embarrass ourselves.
I love that.
All right.